sponsored by JMR Rentals, jmrny.com.
Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend. I'm Jason Godby, and today on the program, we're going to be taking a look at some films that we first learned about at last year's Tribeca Film Festival. But first, we've got some No Rest for the Weekend news. To start, we've got a couple of announcements for upcoming events here in New York City. Coming up on March 27th at Cipriani on 42nd Street in Manhattan, our friends at NYWFT, New York Women in Film and Television, present the 44th Annual Muse Awards. The gala celebrates women of vision and achievement. Each year, remarkable and accomplished women are honored with this prestigious award. Past honorees include Sharon Stone, Sandra Oh, Anne Dowd, Ellen Burstyn, and Laura Dern. For more information, you can visit nywift.org/muse. In April, Film and Lincoln Center will present the 49th Chaplin Award to Academy Award winner Jeff Bridges, who will be honored at a gala evening at Lincoln Center on April 29th. The acclaimed actor, producer, and musician, Jeff Bridges has created a range of memorable characters over a rich and varied film career spanning 7 decades. The Chaplin Award has been bestowed upon legendary actors and filmmakers such as Alfred Hitchcock, Sidney Poitier, Barbara Streisand, Martin Scorsese, Meryl Streep, Spike Lee, Cate Blanchett, and Viola Davis. The Chaplin Award Gala is a major annual fundraiser for Film at Lincoln Center, and proceeds go to support the nonprofit organization's year-round programs, including film series, student programs, and film festivals such as the New York Film Festival and New Directors New Films. For more information on this event and Film at Lincoln Center, visit filmlink.org. All right, so last year we reported on several films that premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival, and we wanted to give you an update on some upcoming movie release dates and where you can find some of these titles. First up, in February, Somewhere Quiet was released on video on demand platforms. According to IMDb, the story follows a woman played by Jennifer Kim as she readjusts to normalcy after a kidnapping. Her sense of reality begins to deteriorate when she travels to her husband's family compound. We spoke with star Jennifer Kim on the red carpet at Tribeca. Jennifer, red carpet, Tribeca, you've arrived. How does it feel?
It feels great to be here. I mean, it's so nice to be able to celebrate with everybody that you've worked with for so long, that you loved, and just had such an intense, beautiful time. Finally get to see it and be together, and in a way that's not very, because this movie's pretty dark, so we can be in a light headspace is really special.
Have you seen the movie yet?
I have seen the movie, but I just saw it at home, like, on my little laptop, like, in pieces, because it's really hard for me to watch myself, but I loved everybody so much that I really wanted to see their work, and so I made myself watch it, and very proud of Olivia and Marin and Tucker, Michael. Everyone is just amazing.
How do you think it'll be seeing it with an audience? How do you think the audience will react to it?
Oh, I'm actually not going to watch it tonight. Marin and I are going to go to her place and just like...
You're chickening out?
Yeah, we're chickening out. But I hope that everyone enjoys it. I think it'll be a good experience, hopefully, for people to watch in a theater. Maybe I'm second guessing not watching it now, but I think that's for the best. So I don't have like a breakdown.
Are you one of those actors that doesn't like to watch?
It's very difficult to watch. So,
you know, we were talking earlier about the fan base. What kind of effect do you feel it'll have? What kind of effect do you want it to have?
I hope that it'll make people think. Because I feel like there's the horror genre, which is like, you know, the final girl. But this takes what happens to the final girl after the horror movie is done. And it asks that question when the girl goes home and has no safety net or comfortable person to unpack everything that happened to her. Like, what could happen? And so I think that's pretty exciting. I don't know that that has been investigated as deeply as just... in horror movies, it's the second chapter that people don't really analyze yet. So
it's a little bit of a meditation on trauma and what happens after trauma. You went through this, and you know, you kind of, I guess, you start out traumatized for this one.
What does that do to you as a performer, and how do you, like, sort of, do you shake it off at the end of the night? Are you one of those, I'm going to be in character all the time people? Like, how do you manage?
Well, you just do all the work, and then you let it go when you get to set, and, like, hope that all the foundation that you've built is there for you and available, because I feel like you can get in the zone, and, like, it can be very dark and very scary. And the producers were very supportive. Like, if you need therapy, if you need anything, like, we know this is really dark. We want to be there for you. And surprisingly, I was able to jump in and out of it pretty easily. I think that maybe my training finally came to some use, and everyone was just so lovely. So it wasn't too hard to go in and out of it. But at the same time, having watched the movie, of course, I'm like, well, maybe if I went full method and, like, went Jeremy Strong and, like, lived separately, never talked to anyone, like, my performance would be much better. Like, maybe I should have done that. So that's kind of in the back of my mind, but I don't know.
Or maybe you'd need counseling, you know?
Or maybe everyone would just hate me, so.
What was the hardest thing for you to have to go through?
Literally every scene in this movie is really difficult. Like, this was a shoot where before each scene I'd have a freak out, being like, I don't know how I'm gonna do this, and then I would somehow do it. And so I can't even believe that it happened. So I can't pinpoint one exact scene, but just the whole process of getting into her headspace, fleshing out the history of all the trauma of her past, her childhood, like, even before the kidnapping, like, it's that in itself, just really getting into the headspace was difficult. I read this memoir and of a woman who was kidnapped, and I literally read it in one sitting. I stood up and I brought the book and put it in my trash can outside my house, because I was like, okay, I got what I needed from that. I do not want this in my house. Like, so just really coming to terms with the specificity of the dark material.
Coming up later this month, The Listener, the new feature from director Steve Buscemi, is set to be released on March 29th. According to IMDb, the film follows a helpline volunteer, played by Tessa Thompson, who is part of a small army that gets on the phone every night, fielding calls from depressed, lonely, and broken people. We spoke with director Steve Buscemi on the red carpet when he was visited by an unexpected guest.
What does it mean to you and to the film to be at Tribeca?
So is Adam Sandler. Look, this festival means a lot to me because it was created after 9/11, partly as a way to revitalize downtown. To me, they've revitalized all of New York. So a big thanks to Jane Rosenthal and Bob De Niro. This is an important one. It's New York, so I'm very happy to be here at this festival.
For you, what made you want to direct this one?
It was a beautiful script written by Alessandro Caman. The characters were just so well drawn, and I think it's such an important subject matter that I wanted to be involved.
What can you tell us about the film and the plans for the film going forward?
Well, we're here at the festival. We'll see what we'll see what happens after this. But it's a film starring Tessa Thompson. She plays a home helpline worker. And it deals with very important mental health issues that I think we all either struggle with or we know a friend or family member. So I'm very proud of it.
That is one of my favorite moments from last year's fest. It's not every day you get photobombed by Richard Gere. Another feature at Tribeca last year was Blood for Dust. This is the story of a traveling salesman who's drowning under the weight of providing for his family and this myth of the American dream when he finds himself in a dangerous situation after a chance encounter with a colleague who has a dark past. It stars Kit Harington and Stephen Dorff. We caught up with one of the stars of the film, Nora Zehetner, director Rod Blackhurst, and producer Noah Lang at Tribeca. First of all, red carpet, Tribeca Film Festival. How does it feel?
Great. I'm so excited to be here and to see the movie. I haven't seen the movie yet.
So is there any anticipation, butterflies about that?
Yeah, I hate watching myself. It's like my idea of how I hate it. So I'm terrified to watch it in a 900-seat theater.
Tell us about your character.
I play Amy. She is married to Cliff, and I kind of feel like everything he does in the movie is, you know, for her and their child, and she's strong and just having a hard time but doing her best to keep it together.
What do you want people to take away from this movie?
The inequality in America, how hard it is for people, how unfair it is, unjust. Maybe give people like a bit of a break for, I mean, sometimes you make a wrong decision for the right reasons.
Back in 2015, I had a film premiere here. It's called Here Alone. It's the only midnight film to ever win the Audience Award here at the Tribeca Film Festival. We vowed after that experience that we would bring our next film back to Tribeca. Tribeca took a chance on us, and it only felt right that when the time came and we could show them our love, that we would do so in return. So being here tonight, being here with this film, it's personal, and it feels fantastic.
How do you want this film to affect audiences?
Blood for Dust is a crime thriller involving situations that most normal people are never going to find themselves in. But inside of these devices are these metaphorical moments about life and choice and morality and right and wrong and family. And I hope that anybody watching this film wonders what they would do in a situation like this.
Well, how does it feel to have arrived at Tribeca?
It feels fantastic. I mean, this venue is gorgeous. I've been to premieres here before, but I wasn't. It wasn't my film, so it feels pretty remarkable to be looking, you know, looking out over this huge crowd and knowing that we get to show this movie to premiere this movie right now. It's honestly, it's kind of overwhelming in a great way.
What's the movie about, and what impact you want to have it have on audience?
What I keep kind of coming back to is that the movie is ultimately about the theme of class and how there's two sets of rules in society, one for the rich and one for the poor. And this is a movie that interrogates that, but in a genre trapping. And it's also about a man who's trapped by circumstances and is trying desperately to get out of them. And I think that people can really relate to that feeling of being overwhelmed right now. So, and then I hope that all translates, and I hope they have a good time because it's a gorgeous movie. I'm looking at our composer right now, and he wrote one of the most beautiful scores that I think holds up against any score you're going to hear in a movie. So I couldn't be more excited.
Coming up in May, Fresh Kills, a new mafia feature, which follows the story of the loyal women of an organized crime family that dominated New York City in the late 20th century. Last year at Tribeca, we spoke with one of the film's stars, Emily Bader, along with writer-director Jennifer Esposito.
Emily, I gotta ask you, red carpet at Tribeca with this movie, what does that feel like?
Unreal. Like I'm dreaming. I think I'll figure it out tomorrow that I'm actually here. That this has happened. I've never done anything like this in my entire life, and for it to be with this film, I think that's the most special thing because we put our heart and soul into this, so there's nothing better.
Can you talk a little bit about the film and kind of a little bit about your character?
This film is basically about a kind of classic late 1980s, 1990 family, Italian-American family from Staten Island, who is very likely affiliated with organized crime, but unlike the classic crime mob genre that you've seen before where it revolves around, you know, the smoking table of men, we're basically taking the camera and pointing it in the direction of the women that live behind the scenes. So I play Rose, who is the youngest daughter of the two daughters in the family, and she is in a dilemma emotionally because she loves her family, but she doesn't feel like what has been allotted for her in this life is what she wants. So figuring out how to leave is scary.
You're the Michael Corleone kind of.
Yes, you could say that.
What's the experience like working with Jennifer Esposito, working on this film?
She's amazing. I mean, it's so impressive to me. I mean, first time director, I don't know how it's possible. She works in such a way that makes everyone so comfortable. She drives a set with passion. There's never been any pressure. It's always been compassionate, and she really, I mean, without her help, I don't think I would have been able to do this.
So here tonight, seeing it with an audience, how do you want the film to impact people? What do you want people to walk away with?
That's such a good question. I personally, with my character Rose, I could connect to her in so many ways. I think that it's really scary being put in a box, especially as a young woman, and I think still so many women are put in boxes. And what's even harder is breaking out of that box. And it's not always the safest thing to do, even when you have the bravery to do it. So I hope that people can like see this like art, this thing we've made, and appreciate it for the pain and trauma that these women are going through that maybe people can relate to personally.
What are your hopes for the film?
I hope as many people see it as possible. I think that this film is something that nobody's ever seen before. And I think a lot of people should see it because it's telling a very big message and painting this beautiful picture. I think it would do the world some good. So I hope that, you know, as many people see it as can happen.
Thank you so much. First off, directorial debut, and you're here at Tribeca. What does that feel like?
It feels incredible, especially after the journey of this film. It really feels incredible.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, how you came to, was this your project? Did somebody bring it to you?
Mine. This was something I've thought about since I was a kid. And through the years of my career, I pitched it around, and people were like, great, you know. Every actor has a story and a script, and it was relentless in my head. It was something that would not let me put it down, and I had to do it. And I just got tired of the roles that I was seeing for myself, and it was like, how much can you complain? Do something about it. So I did.
So with this film, I mean, you know, it's not like we haven't seen a mafia movie before. What are you guys bringing new to the genre?
We're seeing the females. We're seeing the women's perspective of this beloved drama, a genre that we've never seen before. We've never seen the young women in this world. Never.
Were you afraid of, like, perpetuating any stereotypes or anything like that?
Absolutely. Being Italian-American, and absolutely. It's very upsetting to, like, that's the only thing that they know us for is being in the mafia. However... we've never seen the women properly. So before I say, okay, let's now show other parts, let's see those women that we haven't really seen before.
What do you want people to take away from this movie?
With any and all art, everyone taking away what they feel and what they get, that's the beauty of art. You're able to take away and say, you know, I see this and I see that, and hopefully strike up a conversation. And we learn about each other through film and through art, and that's, to me, what it's supposed to be.
Fresh Kills is set to release on May 17th. The new streaming series, Choir, is the story of the Detroit Youth Choir, who took the world by storm at America's Got Talent back in 2019. Led by Anthony White, DYC has played some of the biggest stages in the country. I spoke with the choir director at Tribeca on the red carpet for the series premiere.
It's truly a great opportunity to be here. I mean, look, man, this is Tribeca. Who would ever thought the Detroit Youth Choir would be here? And also with Disney and Blumhouse, come on. And Imagine, come on. I mean, this is going to be a phenomenal show. And I want everybody to just dive into what the Detroit Youth Choir is all about. Hard work and perseverance.
So can you give me some history and tell me, like, the story of the choir?
First of all, I took over the organization back in 1999, 2000. And from then on, we've been so successful. I kind of use my own style of directing because I'm a crazy director. As they will see in the docuseries, but the kids get it because they know that it's genuine. And ever since the year 2000 to now, we've been ripping it up. We've been killing it. But it took one man to really see us, which was Terry Crews, and he put us on the national stage along with Simon Cowell as well and the judges. They put us on a national stage where we were seen. And you know, it only takes one person to really see you. So I'm glad I'm here.
Can you take me through the story? Like, where does the story pick up with you guys? And where does it see you through?
Well, the story of the Detroit Youth Choir, it begins, of course, in a small rehearsal space in Marygrove College, Detroit. Big shout out to the Marygrove Conservancy. And it follows us through our plight. Our plight to do the sing at Carnegie Hall. And I think Carnegie Hall is the biggest climax. So I can't give it all away, though. But that's kind of where the story is. Like, you know, they wanted we're going to show the intense auditions and the intense rehearsals leading up to Carnegie Hall. And I believe there are some other things, and hopefully we'll be back for a second season.
Seeing it with audience here, when it comes out on Disney Plus, like, what do you want audiences to get out of it? How do you see the impact of it?
Well, I want the audience to just remember what you see here. You're going to see a group of young Detroit and Metro Detroit students become engulfed in my directorial pursuit to make them the best young people in America. And I believe that our young people is ready for it. You know, they're ready for this big stage. I mean, you know, I thought AGT was the biggest stage, but quite naturally, I believe Tribeca is a huge stage for them to be seen. And I love our kids with all my heart, and our wonderful staff as well. We have a great staff. I can't do it all by myself.
What was the biggest sort of impact on you that it had personally?
I mean, the biggest impact that this story had on me, that this choir has on me, is just my passion. I mean, if you would have seen us years ago rehearsing in a dirty basement, you wouldn't believe that we'll be here in New York at Tribeca. So the impact is mental and is also physical on me. I mean, you can see my hair is gray. But I'm still a young man still. I just turned 44 yesterday, you know. But, yeah, these kids are tremendous. I love them. I love our staff. Our staff works with these kids every day of the week, and we wouldn't be able to do it without them.
You can catch Choir streaming now on Disney+. All right, so next up, we've got a streaming recommendation for you. It's one I think you may have missed on Netflix. So who remembers We Are the World? It's 1985, and the American Music Awards have just wrapped. A group of some of the biggest names in music gather together to record one epic song to raise money for famine relief in Africa. A song written by Lionel Richie and Michael Jackson, produced by Quincy Jones. The stunning lineup of artists includes Stevie Wonder, Harry Belafonte, Sidney Lauper, Bruce Springsteen, Kenny Loggins, Huey Lewis, Smokey Robinson, Bob Dylan, and Willie Nelson, just to name a handful. The film is filled with archival footage of the recording of the single and the music video, which was done at the same time. In addition to the archival footage, there were present-day interviews with some of the people who were involved with the recording, including Huey Lewis, Sheila E., and Lionel Richie, who were among the stars gathered on the red carpet at Grauman's Egyptian in Los Angeles for the premiere.
It was just an amazing evening. It's hard to believe that it even happened, so it's really nice to revisit. Just the immense talent in that room, you know, and people who've influenced me. I mean, I wouldn't have been there but for Bob Dylan and but for, you know, Stevie Wonder, and I mean, amazing stuff. It was a wonderful thing, you know, when artists come together for a good cause, and I think that's a good thing in general.
Everyone's looking at him.
There's a lot to remember because it was so amazing and incredible, and to be in that room with everyone is just unbelievable. And then to think how long ago it was, but the purpose of why we were there was very humbling, to say the least. And it's an amazing organization, and it's still running. So they're still making money from, you know, donations and helping people, and that was what it was for. I'm anxious to see it, but it did bring up things that I never spoke about the night, so I know people were like, wait, what happened? Yeah, that happened. So it was nice to be able to share those moments. Thank God a lot of us are still here. You know, there are many that have passed, but just the experience of that night, and, you know, those days are not here anymore, like the way that the award shows went and who showed up and the music has just changed so much, you know. I just think I was born at the perfect time to be able to be a part of that, yeah.
I'm so excited about it because I didn't realize that in the soup of that night, we were actually documenting, we were shooting the video, recording, I mean, think about that, and doing the stills. All the same time, that's impossible. If you tried to pull that off in 7 hours today, it's not going to happen. I mean, just to be quite honest with you, I want people to see behind the scenes, the vulnerability of all the artists. And because of their talent, we're confident enough to walk in a room with other incredible talent and told, are you kidding me? Everyone would have to have a private room today. There's a moment in time when you, after you start telling the story for so long, you doubt, did that really happen? And then you realize it did happen. And so this is like a confirmation of a dream that happened for real. And so it was that aha moment. Oh, of course Ray did that. Oh, of course Billy Joel did that. You know, but it's wonderful to be able to see it live 39 years later. There's one group that says, oh my God, I remember that when I was 3 and 10. That was called Bow. That's the director. And the other half of it is an educational thing. I mean, I actually am thrilled that my grandkids, Michael and I started out to do an anthem. It's an anthem. And, you know, my grandkids are singing We Are the World, and it's a permanent fixture of that, of the world.
So everyone involved with this project is a mega talent. And it was quite moving to see them gather together, performing together, especially when you consider how many of them are no longer with us. I mean, there's never going to be another Tina Turner or another Harry Belafonte or Quincy Jones or Smokey Robinson. And this documentary serves as a reminder of all that. Through the film, we get to witness this extraordinary moment in history. It's real lightning in a bottle type stuff. It's rare, it's precious, and if you're a Gen X kid, if you grew up in the 80s, if you just love 80s music, or you're a fan of rockumentaries, this doc is a must-see. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more of our content, including more news and movie reviews, visit our website, norestfortheweekendpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, youtube.com/getbehindtherabbit. I'd like to thank everyone who came out to chat with us last year at Tribeca and our sponsor, JMR Rentals. For Behind the Rabbit Productions, I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.